Lycoming ponders the next step in a lawsuit award. The FAA wants to fine Frontier Airlines $380,000. And Chuck Schumer says free carry-ons ought to be a law. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, April 13th, 2010. There's been no official reaction from Lycoming so far to last week's $89 million award of damages by a Philadelphia jury in the case of a Piper crash in 1999. The NTSB found the 1968 Cherokee was loaded to within 10 pounds of max gross weight with five people and full fuel and near the aft CG limit with a tail almost touching the ground when it took off from a fuel stop at Youngstown, Ohio. Witnesses reported the plane struggled to climb and was hanging on the prop. It apparently stalled in a turn with its engine roaring all the way to the ground. The pilot and three passengers died. A 15-year-old survived. The NTSB blamed the pilot for losing control, failing to maintain sufficient airspeed, and failure to properly trim the aircraft. But of course, NTSB findings are not allowed in court. Attorneys for the survivor and the families of the victims convinced an 11-member jury that the blame lay with Lycoming for knowing about and concealing a carburetor problem dating back to 1968. The manufacturer invoked liability protections for aircraft over 18 years old. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has twice disallowed that defense. It's not clear whether the manufacturer might pursue relief in federal courts. The FAA has proposed a $380,000 civil penalty against Frontier Airlines for operating several aircraft on about 900 flights with incorrect emergency placards. The FAA alleges that in 2008 and 2009, Frontier reconfigured the passenger cabins on some Airbus planes to permit dual-aisle access to the overwing emergency exits, and then flew the planes in revenue service before updating placards telling passengers how to operate those exits. The airline has 30 days to respond. New York Senator Charles Schumer has responded to Spirit Airlines' new charge for carry-on bags by elevating free carry-ons to the status of a right. Quote, airline passengers have always had the right to bring a carry-on bag without having to worry about getting nickeled and dimed by an airline company, unquote. Schumer argues that carry-on bags are where passengers pack medicines and necessities. The airline does still allow a personal item at no cost, and points out the new fee is intended to get people to pay for the things they want while keeping the base fares low. Schumer says he will introduce legislation to address the situation. Up next on ANN, Florida's use tax is alive and well. The Pilots Union fights another airline merger, and finalists are set for the Team America Rocketry Challenge. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 13th. I'm Paul Plack. Visitors to Lakeland, Florida this week will again arrive under the cloud of an aggressive Florida use tax, which targets the owners of new aircraft visiting from out of state. On the pretext of trying to nail tax scofflaws who hold aircraft out of state just to dodge the Florida sales tax, the state legislature has created a use tax which can be applied to owners with no connection to Florida other than visiting for vacations, training, or aircraft maintenance. There are documented cases in which out-of-state owners have been forced to pay this tax. You'll get a bill for 6% of the aircraft's purchase price from the Florida Department of Revenue, and you'll have to prove you've either owned the aircraft for more than 6 months or paid sales tax in another state, in which case you might still owe the difference if your state's tax is lower. FDOR officials have tried to reassure visitors from out-of-state that they don't troll the ramps at fly-ins. But that's not binding, and it really doesn't matter. Under Florida Statutes 213.30, FDOR pays a bounty to private citizens who find and report visitors who might be targets for use tax. It may put a whole new light on those passers-by taking pictures of your aircraft's tail. For somebody seeking the reward, a fly-in would be fish in a barrel. Realizing that the tax punishes not only tourism, but in-state vendors of maintenance, training, and aviation fuel, the Florida House recently voted to exempt aircraft visiting for 21 days or less, but a parallel bill in the state Senate has not passed. The National Business Aviation Association has issued a call to action to its members living in Florida, urging contact with state senators to move Senate Bill 220 out of committee. But it hasn't happened yet, so if you're bringing a new airplane to Florida today, you've been warned. Find relevant links at the bottom of the text version of this story, dated April 12th, at aero-news.net. Amid rumors that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are deep in merger negotiations, the Airline Pilots Association is making clear its opposition to the idea. Captain Wendy Morse, chairman of United Master Executive Council, says, quote, "United pilots share the view of many industry analysts and experts that a United merger with U.S. Airways is unlikely to achieve significant synergies. In addition, the considerable legal hurdles to such a combination will only serve to distract United's management team from solving its own pressing issues. U.S. Airways pilots face years of litigation as they attempt to work through their operational integration difficulties with America West pilots. United pilots certainly would not benefit by being drawn into that situation," unquote. Morse adds that pilots stand ready to support any merger that would protect and advance their careers, but that a merger with U.S. Airways does not appear to come close to meeting that standard. The Aerospace Industries Association says a field of 669 teams has been narrowed to 100 finalists for TARC, the Team America Rocketry Challenge. The world's largest rocket contest will take place Saturday, May 15th at Great Meadow in the Plains, Virginia. Qualifying teams of middle and high school students have the chance to earn $60,000 in scholarships and prizes. The TARC champion will also win the opportunity to compete internationally at an air show near London in July. AIA President Marion Blakey says the contest is bearing fruit. Quote, "It's an exciting time for young people to be exposed to rocketry and all the aerospace industry has to offer. We're seeing a real surge in our industry with TARC alumni taking advantage of exciting career opportunities with many of our member companies," unquote. TARC teams are challenged to design, build, and launch a model rocket with a raw egg payload to an altitude of 825 feet and achieve a flight duration between 40 and 45 seconds. The rocket must return the egg safely and unbroken without using a parachute. The contest is intended to inspire students in the STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and math. More than 50,000 youth have participated in the contest since it started in 2003. Find out more at rocketcontest.org. Still ahead, the Predator fleet hits a million hours. Garmin brings synthetic vision to the low end of the market. And what happened to those banners over Augusta? You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, April 13th. I'm Paul Platt. General Atomics Aeronautical says the Predator UAV, in its several variants, has achieved an auspicious milestone, 1 million flight hours, accumulated by the fleet over almost 80,000 missions. The identification of the specific aircraft and customer that achieved the milestone won't be known until mid-May due to delayed flight hours reporting from the field. Predator series UAVs are operated by the U.S. Air Force, Army, Navy, Department of Homeland Security, NASA, the Italian Air Force, the U.K.'s Royal Air Force, and other customers. Over 400 Predators have been built since the first one took flight in 1994. This may seem a little over the top for aircraft which are usually flown VFR, but Garmin says the G300 and G3X that it sells into the light sport and experimental aircraft markets will soon be available with synthetic vision. The option, known as SVX in this platform, will come with new units and be available as a download for installed units already flying. Garmin VP of Marketing Gary Kelly commented, quote, "Synthetic vision is one of the most useful, safety-enhancing features that we offer, and it makes a world of difference in how you aviate. G300 and G3X pilots will appreciate the added situational awareness in 3D as they fly," unquote. Aircraft equipped with a Garmin GTX 330 transponder or other compatible traffic receiver will also display traffic alerts that use standard traffic symbology in 3D. The G300 is exclusive to the Cessna Skycatcher. The G3X can be configured using 1, 2, or 3 displays and is designed to be highly adaptable to a wide variety of light sport and experimental aircraft. And finally today, officials say there's never been a ban on banner towing over the Augusta National Golf Club. But then apparently nobody's tried it before. As Tiger Woods was making his post-scandal return at the Masters over the weekend, banners seen included one that said, "Tiger, did you mean Bootyism?" Another said, "Sex addict? Sure, me too." 4 other messages were waiting to be displayed. But after talking to the pilot, the FAA decided there was a problem with the plane, serious enough that it couldn't be flown over crowds. "We may never know what the rest of those banners had to say. The plane was allowed to fly to Ohio for maintenance on a ferry permit." There probably will be a TFR next year to stop banner towing over the Masters. And before you insist that the government would never restrict airspace in deference to commercial interests, read the NOTAMs for Disneyland and Disney World. They allow waivers only for arriving VIPs, security, and companies which have paid Disney for broadcast rights. Disney and the TSA will tell you it's because airliners being hijacked somehow make small planes a danger. But tourism interests will nod and wink and tell you there are 2 things Disney hates: banners for competing attractions and traffic reporters telling the public about long lines at gates. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell looks back on highlights from AEA 2010. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.